Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Some of them, it was maybe their last chance to be able to win this great competition.
In towards Drogba, it's a bullet header, Chelsea level, Didier Drogba does it again.
The day before the game, you know, we did this meeting and we produced this video. Some cried as well, you know, because obviously some people had their mother on the video, some people, the kids, the wives.
This to make Chelsea champions of Europe.
It's a beautiful ending because he was going to leave that summer. It's a beautiful career in this club for Didier Drogba.
Drogba scores! History is made! Chelsea, the champions of European football. How good does that sound?
2012 was a year of gigantic sporting achievement. Gigantic British sporting achievement. At London's Olympic and Paralympic Games, Team GB won over 60 golds. In tennis, a Brit won a Grand Slam for the first time since 1936, Andy Murray at the US Open. But perhaps as remarkable as those achievements was Chelsea's victory in the Champions League. From the last 16 defeat that saw the London club fire their manager, to their mind-boggling comeback at Barcelona, to their triumph over mighty Bayern in the Bavarian's own backyard, it was all achieved with a man almost no one expected to be in charge. His name? Roberto Di Matteo. And he joins us today. Roberto Di Matteo, hello.
Hello, James. Nice to speak to you.
And to you too. It's so nice to have you here to talk to us about 2012, the season that you made Gary Neville make noises we didn't think were possible.
Yeah, he got a little bit excited, didn't he, on that goal.
I mean, I imagine we all did. I mean, you must have.
Yeah, I mean, you can see from my reaction that I was over the moon after Fernando Torres got that equaliser in Barcelona.
Yeah.
We all were, yeah, absolutely.
It was a catalogue of moments like that, that campaign in the Champions League. And yeah, Gary himself, somewhat surprisingly, describing it as written in the stars when it came to its culmination, that fateful night in Munich. Do you believe in such things? Did you believe that night in Munich that it was written in the stars?
We won it against all the odds, I would say. And we had a feeling that things were going our way as well. But we thoroughly worked hard for it as well. You know, you don't get the luck by sitting at home on your sofa. You need to work to have that bit of luck during a campaign. But I have to say, I think every team that wins this big competition, this great competition, on the way, there are some crucial moments where situations, actions go in favor for them. Mm. Looking just the last campaign with Real Madrid, I mean, you know, how many times during their campaign were they out of it and they managed to come back and win it at the end? So it's pretty hard to win the Champions League. It's very, very hard, but it's very exciting. You get a lot of satisfaction if you manage to do so.
Nothing bigger, I would imagine. As you say, there's always adversity in all of these victories. In this podcast series, we're talking about the great Champions League triumphs. But that Chelsea team, that Chelsea campaign, really against the odds. And the way that it, I wouldn't say began, but the way it began with you as manager was particularly so, in a very difficult spot. Chelsea had been beaten 3-1. Away at Napoli in the last 16. The club had then taken the decision to dismiss manager Andre Villas-Boas and promote his assistant, you. How bad did things look, Roberto?
Well, Well, it was a difficult season, you know. The results weren't as good as probably expected for a big club like Chelsea. And so we were navigating a difficult season with Andre Villas-Boas. It was also a group that was probably coming to the end of an era as well. There were many players that had been there for seven, eight, 9 years, probably were the last chance maybe of winning this big competition as well. So it was a little bit unfortunate for him because I guess, you know, as a manager, if you are given the time to see those patchy moments through, you might come out at the end of the tunnel. But our job is unfortunately like that. You know, it's so results driven and there is obviously no patience anymore and no time really given unless the results are very good.
Well, it's a very interesting point you make that there's never patience for managers, but particularly when you've got a group of players who feel like this could be their last chance. They've really got very little sympathy, I guess, for anyone they feel might be in any way spoiling their prospects. What about you then coming in? It's an incredibly complex thing taking over a club midway through a season, different because you'd already been part of the structure, I guess. But what was the biggest thing for you then to try and turn that situation around?
Well, somehow I was in a good position because ultimately there was only 3 months maybe left of the season. And, you know, it could have gone either the way we did it or a complete failure. But then, you know, the players, you know, I spoke to the players about the fact that for some of them, it was maybe their last chance, you know, to be able to win this great competition. And also it was a question of, you know, pulling everybody together and going the same direction. And sometimes when you come in as a manager, you know, for somebody else, you can sort of sweep all the problems under the carpet and just focus on the target and the objectives. And this is how we did it. You know, we pulled everybody together and they were great. The team was fantastic. The players, obviously, me being an ex-player and an ex-player of the club as well, that probably helped me a lot to have the trust and the respect from the players.
That said, you'd been part of the structure and you'd seen a team that wasn't necessarily all pulling together for a variety of reasons. A team that was full of character, which ultimately was a good thing, but I imagine when things weren't going well, could be an obstacle as well. Were you nervous about taking over that situation?
I was excited. I was very excited. As I said, I really didn't have much to lose, James. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I was a caretaker manager. I mean, right. You know, worst case scenario, what happens, you know, they send you home, but, you know, I'm still alive and I still have a family and I still have my children and my life goes on. So just try to make the best out of a situation. That was my mindset.
So what, in practical terms, did you do? Did you sit down and have kind of one-to-one chats with players?
Oh, I had, you know, with everybody. I had a chat talks with every single player. And then we had lots of team meetings and so on and so on.
You mentioned saying to the players that this could be their last chance to win this competition. Realistically, though, at that point, 3-1 down from the first leg of the last 16, did that feel a little bit like empty talk? Did you realistically feel there was any chance of Chelsea being European champions?
Of course, this is football. It's unpredictable. I mean,
right.
why wouldn't we think that we can turn over a result against Napoli? We scored an away goal as well. So we only needed to win 2-0. And of course, we all believed that we could go through to the next round. Absolutely. We did it the hard way, but we did it. It was a great night, that night against Napoli.
I was there.
You were there. I mean, the atmosphere, James, was electric. Yeah. It was such a great football night.
Yeah, I have to say, I was a couple of rows behind you. The beginning, I imagine, the opening period of the game when Napoli had, I mean, there was one chance for Cavani in particular, but they were looking like they might well add to their tally. I imagine that was quite tense, but the belief that seemed to suffuse the stadium as the match wore on was quite remarkable.
Yeah, especially after the first goal from Didier, wasn't it? I mean, it was just an incredible atmosphere at the bridge, and the team played ever so well. And it was, you know, Napoli was a really good team, and they were obviously, from the first leg, they had an advantage as well. So, again, it was against some of the odds, but we believed in it. We believed in it and we did it.
It was your first Champions League game as a manager. Did that make it special? Did that bring any extra anxiety for you?
No, not really. The Champions League games, they bring a different flavor to the environment because, you know, you play against teams that you don't see week in, week out or every year. So it's a different proposition. And you can feel that in the air as well, you know, with the fans and the players, you know, they're excited playing against different teams from different countries, different cultures as well, because it's, you know, it's a clash of cultures as well.
Certainly was. Drogba, you mentioned glancing in Ribéry's whip cross to get Chelsea on the board, and then John Terry with the header to make it 2-0, which put you ahead because, of course, you had the extra the away goal. Ooh, but then Gökhan Inler's goal for Napoli.
But I didn't think that we were out of it. I just never thought, me and I think the team, we never thought that we wouldn't have a chance. We never thought. We believed all the time. I was ever so calm on the sideline because I never thought, no, this team is giving up or anything. You know, I was at that belief that it wasn't over. It was not over. But we knew it was crucial to go through.
Was that three wins out of three? Because that was your third game in charge. You'd had a league game against
FA
Stoke.
FA Cup was the first game, I think, at Birmingham.
Right. And then Stoke and in the league. Mm-hmm. And three wins from three, which, how important was that in terms of getting the team onside, in terms of
crucial.
Getting their belief?
It was crucial to show a reaction as well, you know. And I think some of the, obviously, the lights or the pressure was a bit on the team as well, obviously, because obviously, you know, just a manager was unfortunately sacked. And I have to say that ABB did a brilliant job. He did a really, really good job. He's a fantastic manager. You know, he's very, very well prepared. He's technically and tactically a really, really good manager and a good person as well.
Mm. A very interesting man with a very different set of interests coming to the profession from a different place to a lot of other people. You mentioned some of the characters, or we've mentioned some of the characters in there. Who was fun to be a manager of? How was David Luiz to manage?
There were lots of characters. I think you mentioned it. There were lots of characters. David Luiz was buoyant, I would say. He was buoyant. He was good. He was good. Mm. He was a good boy.
The fact that you came in, though, from a more traditional background than André Villas-Boas, the fact that you've been not just a player, but a player at Chelsea, and you had this relationship with the club, that was something that helped you.
Oh, definitely, 100%. That was a huge help for me to have that past in the club and as a player. And, you know, don't forget, James, I mean, I had already been a Premier League manager. So it's not like I was inexperienced. I had already experienced the Premier League in that sense. So it's not that I was green behind my ears or anything like that.
No, indeed not. And in Chelsea terms, a legendary career. I think, let's say, an illustrious career as a player. The club's record signing, in fact, back in...
At the time, yes.
Yeah. An investment which you had repaid admirably with crucial goals in FA Cup finals, a League Cup final as well, or victories for Chelsea. Would it be fair to describe your kind of playing career, that relationship as kind of forged in triumph, but also in pain because of the injury which brought your career to
end? Well, I think you described it very well, yes. But, you know, it's part of life, James. You know, you can get injured on a football field. You can have a car accident. You know, you can trip down the stairs. It's just part of life. Maybe it was my destiny that I had to, you know, end my career early. Who knows? I mean, it's one of those freak things that can happen. You know, you have slight tackles, I mean, 1,000 in a career, and, you know, it just was something that maybe was in my path.
Mm, a brutal incident, without doubt. All right, so that was possibly in Chelsea's destiny that you would have taken that course and then, as you say, had experiences managerially, come back into the fold as André Villas-Boas' assistant and then been there ready to step up when this team, with perhaps their last opportunity of a pretty glorious generation, when things began to align for them through Napoli, and that brought you into a quarter-final clash with Benfica. Now, among the games of this campaign, there are some pretty special ones. This is the one that maybe gets overlooked. I'm thinking of the second leg.
Forgotten. Yeah.
And the Raul Morales goal.
What a goal, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty tense towards the end because, I mean, we were sort of cruising, you know, and then obviously they scored, and then it became a little bit tense towards the end, and then Raul Morales got an absolute stunner, didn't he?
I could describe it, but I wouldn't begin to approximate what it actually felt like as a player. Could you talk us through what he would have been thinking as he made that breakdown field? I mean, he first of all kind of does a little sombrero over a Benfica player. I'm ashamed to say I don't know who it was, but then he just bombs on and beats the keeper in spectacular fashion. As somebody who, you know, might have performed a similar move
as a Portuguese against a Portuguese team.
Yeah, but could you break that down for us? That goal.
Raul was an integral part of the team. He played many, many games, many, many important games as well. And he was a different character to the others. He was always somebody that was keeping himself to himself, a little bit unorthodox, you know, I'd say, but very reliable, you know, fantastic, reliable guy. Been on the quiet side, but you knew that you could count on him, you know, when things got tough. And he did very, very well for me, for the club, I think.
One of the sad things about this campaign is the moment that he gets the yellow card against Barcelona then in the semi-final. And he knows, unlike Ivanovic, who had to get told in the post-game interview, as I recall, that he was going to miss the final. But Morales immediately knows, and you can see it in his eyes, like, referee, don't do this.
Yeah, he was unfortunate, I think. He was unfortunate, obviously, to miss the final, because he probably knew as well he would definitely have played in that game as well. And it was such an emotional game, that semi-final in Barcelona, James. So you have to excuse if somebody after the game didn't think clearly about what was going to happen next.
Who are the players that you look back from that squad on with most affection?
I don't think I have one player. Yeah, no, I think the whole group, because they gave everything, and I think I utilized all of them, and everybody was so much involved, and everybody gave everything they could give to the team, to the club, to myself. So I don't have anyone in particular, I would say. If you look at the moments that during certain games, one that maybe is a little bit, or was a little bit overlooked, was Ramirez. Because Ramirez made such important contribution in very crucial moments of games. You look at the goal at the semi-final against Barcelona. You look at the assist that he did in the first leg against Barcelona for Didier Drogba. You just mentioned before the cross for Didier's first goal against Napoli. Let's not forget, he scored the first goal in the FA Cup final against Liverpool. And he was such a versatile player as well. In the semi-final, he was playing as a left winger, And then because of all the conundrums during the game, he ended up playing right back and scoring the goal. And what a goal he scored.
Yeah, absolutely crucial.
But, you know, Peter Cech was absolutely magnificent. Tower, he was absolutely, I mean, everybody knew, or we all knew that he was brilliant, but he went a step above the brilliance. And I don't know if there is a word to describe it. And Lamps, you know, I had so many meetings with Frank.
All right. We'll name check a few more as we go through. But conundrums against Barcelona, as you say. The question, the semi-final against Pep Guardiola's side, that Barcelona team with Messi, with Xavi, with Iniesta, etc. How did you get through that second leg at the Nou Camp?
I closed my eyes and I did the cross sign to the sky and hoped for the best.
So, I mean, for the purposes of context, this I mentioned, who, you know, it's Pep's side and he's moving on. This is supposed to be his glorious finale, and he's got the team to provide it as well. If there was a team that maybe looked like it had destiny outside, a lot of people in Catalonia thought it was Barcelona. Of course, there were some people in Bavaria thought it was their team. We'll come on to them very, very shortly. You'd won, again, against all odds, the first leg at Stamford Bridge, 1-0, Didier Drogba. One of five shots from Chelsea, Barcelona had a shot count in the 20s, no?
May I intervene?
You may.
That was probably the average for Barcelona, you know, having 25 shots, if not more, against any team. Because when I did my match analysis before the games against Barcelona, I watched many games, you know, that Barcelona played in, and I tried to figure out, you know, which way was the best way to play against them. And so I watched teams playing with different system, high, low press, middle press, and all the different systems that you can think of, you know. And the end result was always the same, James. It was always Barcelona winning the games. and, you know, having 70-odd% possession and, you know, as you just said, more than 20 attempts on goal and blah, blah, blah. So it was impossible to stop them. They were such a free-flowing football team. It was impossible. But we focused on the weaknesses there because every team has weaknesses. As great as the team was, they had weaknesses as well. So we focused on them. And one of the weaknesses was that Alves, obviously, as a right back, was bombing on or pushing forward very often and leave space at the back on the right side of Barcelona. That's how we scored the first goal at Stamford Bridge. If you think about it, Ramirez went, you know, we recovered the ball in midfield. I think it was Lamps recovered the ball and plays it out to Ramirez on the left. He plays, crosses the ball for Didier and we score. So we focused on the weaknesses they had, and that's how we scored that goal and we won the game at Stamford Bridge. And it was just impossible to stop them, James. There was no way you could stop them. And obviously going to the second leg, James, you know, we were defending well, and that's all you can do if it's possible. You know, you prepare your team, they're not going to have much of the ball. You know, there's going to be a lot of shadow work and shuffling around and right to left and forwards and backwards. And you're not going to have much of the ball because that's how it is against Barcelona.
But you, in terms of preparing the team, what does that actually involve? You're there ahead of a second leg away to, at the time, probably the best football playing team in the world. You know they're going to come at you. You know they've got some of the most dangerous players in the world. And you know that your current advantage is pretty slender. How much pressure did you feel as manager to come up with something? Having seen so many other teams try to stop Barcelona and fail, you must have been feeling a lot of pressure.
The pressure is always the same. It doesn't really change whether it's against Barcelona or you play against Birmingham. It's a football game, ultimately, and you need to, you'd like to win it and you try to win it. So it doesn't really change the amount of pressure. That's not the issue. It's just that when the opposition is very good, it creates more challenges for your team and for me and my staff. Obviously, we did all our homework. And that night, obviously, you know, the first probably half an hour, you know, they created some chances, but we defended pretty well. Tried to counterattack a couple of times. And I think the whole dynamic of the game changed, obviously, with the sending off. That was a moment where you think, oops, we're 1-0 down, one man sent off. Well, I already had to change Cahill by then. Yeah. So we already reshuffled the back four. I brought in Bosinwa to play right back, Ivanovic into center half. So which was, well, it was fine, you know. And then obviously one man down, you're thinking, okay, both your starting center halves are not pitch anymore.
So in the meantime, because you're being very even-handed about this in your pacato fashion, but Roberto, I mean, this is, at this point, the biggest game of your managerial career. You've talked about instilling confidence in these players, talking to them about this could be their last chance. But you now, as the manager, have the responsibility of keeping that dream alive. But it could not have started any worse. Cahill's gone off injured early on. Busquets made it 1-1 on aggregate. They're swarming forward. John Terry then gives that little nudge to Alexis Sanchez and off he goes. And then, boom, they make it 2-0. So you're a man down and a goal down against that Barcelona team. You must have been feeling a little bit sorry for yourself on the bench.
No. I mean, you don't. You know, you don't have time to feel sorry for yourself. No. That's the wrong probably description. Mm.
When
JT got sent off, I thought, oh my god, now for one second I thought, oh, now we could be in trouble. Okay, but then I put Ramirez from left wing at the right back. Bosinwa in the center half. And then we sort of reorganized ourselves. And I was just trying to get to halftime. You know, I'm thinking, okay, let's get to halftime with the 1-0 down. You know, we're still in the game. It's 1-1 in aggregate. But then obviously they score just before halftime, they score the second goal. And the most crucial moment was that straight away, they must have relaxed maybe a little bit. They must have thought, okay, we've got them in the bag now. Mm. And straight away, a minute or two after that, we scored that vital away goal, that beautiful goal from Ramirez. And then we go into halftime.
I should mention, you've got builders in, I think, at yours at the moment, Roberto, have you?
Yeah, a couple of builders, yeah.
It's adding, I think, if anything, to the tension of these kind of strange strangled noises from the background. What a goal, by the way. You mentioned what a crucial What a crucial moment it was. It possibly, I mean, it's one of the crucial moments of that entire campaign. A lot of moments go to a Champions League victory, but that was a huge one. Frank Lampard's role in that goal, that Ramirez with the chip, but Frank's role?
Yeah, I mean, thinking about our right back, you know, Ramirez, playing with 10 men just before half-time, bombing forward, you know. So if you want to say that we were a defensive team, I mean, our right back scored the goal with 10 men. Away, so you know, just saying. So it was a great reverse pass by Frank. By Frank, you know, the reverse pass into the path of Rami. And then Rami, I mean, nobody would have expected Rami to do that, you know, to lob the keeper. What, you know, first touch, what a goal, my God. And that changed completely the mindset. And also, it changed what we were gonna maybe change for the second half, or what we were gonna have to do for the second half.
Because you're ahead now on away goals. By the way, did people say you were a defensive team a lot, Roberto? Was that something that rankled?
No. But against Barcelona, you have to be a defensive team.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, but it's entirely fair that the way that Chelsea approached that, I mean, you sat back and you suffered and you soaked it up, and Petr Cech was extraordinary, and there were other things, Leo Messi's penalty struck the crossbar. But all things that go towards making history, I guess. What did you say at halftime then? Do you remember?
Well, I changed what I was going to say after the goal, because I was going to say something else. And then, obviously, you know, this beautiful goal from Ramirez came just before halftime. So it was a pretty, it wasn't too much of a long speech. It was quite a short one for the team, and then individual things, you know, with some players, we needed obviously to readjust a little bit because we were down to 10 men. So tactically, a couple of things, but there was more individual talk to some players what we needed to do. So generally, I just said to the players, after a couple of things, I said, you know, guys, I asked them, do you know who is actually in the final right now? And obviously, you know, they played, you know, when you play and you got the adrenaline, and you know, not everybody's as clear to understand, you know, but they looked at each other, looked at me, and I said, yeah, exactly. We are in the final. Right now, we're in the final. So we have 45 minutes, I said, that we just have to try and defend the final of the Champions League. And we can do it. I said, we've done it before. We can do it again. It's possible, but you have to believe in it. We're just going to adjust a couple of things tactically. And then I spoke to some of the players, and that was it. And then obviously, you know, Messi missed the penalty.
Well,
and
yeah, then Drogba goes straight out and concedes a penalty. And I can imagine, yeah. What did I just
that
say?
That was in the game plan, but but, you know, he sacrificed himself so much.
Right.
I mean, he played on his own up there. And, you know, it was a difficult night. Very difficult night.
No question. All right. Well, they streamed forward. I mean, we could dwell on how that game was to watch from the sidelines. But I've seen you say in the past that you felt that you kind of almost turned to the others on the bench and said, they're not scoring against us here. And you take off Juan Mata and bring on Solomon Kalou. You also then take off Drogba for Fernando Torres. How did that work out for you?
Well, Mata and Kalou, I just need, you know, we needed so much training. I just needed fresh players to be able to chase back and also to counterattack if we could, you know. And Didier was naked, you know, poor guy. I mean, he was on his own up there, you know, after we were down to 10 men, and he had to cover, you know, an area of the pitch and blah, blah, blah. So we just made a couple of, you know, tactical changes to bring out fresh legs into the game. But I remember sitting on the bench with Steve next to me, Steve Holland, my assistant, and we could just see the scoreboard from the bench, because the bench was very low there. You almost don't see the other side of the pitch in that, you know. But we could see the scoreboard. And so every now and then, you know, you watch the game, and every now and then you look at the scoreboard and you think, okay, 52 minutes. You know, and they press forward and you look and it's like 57 minutes, and then it's 66 minutes, and then it's 72 minutes. And I'm looking at Silva thinking, you know what? We might survive this, you know? Because the time was just going, playing down, and they weren't scoring. You know, we were just keeping them at bay. Obviously, they had chances, you know, but defenders and Petr Cech and the crossbar and the post and whatever. And then ultimately, Fernando scored this beautiful relieving goal, which he could have scored before. I told him after the game, could have scored before, but it was towards the end, and so I think that was game over for them.
Yeah, it was brilliantly taken. I mean, you at that point you were going through anyway, but what a way to seal it. And you lose your Swiss aplomb a little bit at that point. I've got to say, I remember you talking about a game from your playing days when you actually left Stamford Bridge because you couldn't bear to see the second leg, the Vicenza yeah. game, no? So that's were you fun. Been unable to just deal with what, the disappointment or the what you thought was going to be a disappointing exit or even the tension of watching it? You must have felt similar sensations as a manager, not just maybe when you went down to 10 men with two goals down against Barcelona or 3-1 down when Inla scored against Napoli or even when Thomas Muller scored against you.
James, as a nature, as a person, I am a very optimistic person. I'm okay. a very positive person. So I always believe that good things will come to you if you do the right things. You know, obviously, right. as I said, you know, if you're sitting at home on the sofa, you can't expect somebody knocking on your door and offering you a job or something good to happen. You need to work for it. You know, you need to make your luck. So that's why I always believed that we could make it. I always thought that we could make it. I always thought that the team had all the quality and the experience to win it. Obviously, with all the adversity that comes with going all the way in such a competition. But I always had to believe in it. Even when we were down to 10 and even when we were 3-1 from the first leg of Napoli, even I just believed that we could do it.
There you go. And you were right. You were right. I've seen the Barcelona game, the second leg described by one Chelsea fan, as the most extraordinary game in Chelsea's history. I mean, it's not the final, but as often is the case with triumphant campaigns, the semi-final is almost the most remarkable game of all. Would you say, or do you think the final itself?
Well, it's different because the semi-final is normally, not normally, it's a two legs, isn't it? Mm. So it's 180 minutes. So, you know, the away goal used to count. And the final is just a one-off game. So it depends how it goes. You know, you look at the final that AC Milan played against Liverpool. I mean, that was extraordinary, wasn't it? When they were 3-0 up half-time. So you would probably describe that game as being the most important game.
Indeed. Well, let's get on to your final then. You're through and it's amazing. I think you've leapt into somebody's arms. Was it? I'm not sure if it was Steve Holland's arms.
No Camp?
Yeah, after the...
It was Eddie Newton.
Ah, there you go. But then you got back into the dressing room and you were confronted with a series of players. Ivanovic, who's just been told by Jeff Shreves that he's not going to make the final. John Terry, obviously, is going to be suspended. Raul Morellas is looking more kind of soulful than normal because he's also going to be out. Ramirez is not available, it turns out. How was the mood for you? Were you, the euphoria, but also more problems?
It was a very intense period because we were obviously going to the final of the FA Cup. We were going through in the Champions League and we had the league as well. So we were playing, I think, every 3 or 4 days. For those 3 months, I think we played every 3 or 4 days. We had so many games, so many, many games. So we weren't really able to enjoy much the victories. You know, I remember after the semi-final of the FA Cup against Spurs, which was, you know, a great win and fantastic achievement. I remember the same evening already thinking about, I didn't even celebrate, you know, thinking about the next game that was coming. So after that game, you know, it was obviously, we were all over the moon, over the final, and we picked up the pieces maybe the day after, but then we had already another game to prepare. So I didn't dwell too much on what was going to happen then for the final. So that came then. We had a whole week to prepare for the final. So we did that all in that week. I knew obviously that players were suspended, but I put that at the back of my mind for that time being after the game.
The 2012 UEFA Champions League final saw Bayern Munich playing at home in their own Allianz Arena against Chelsea. The first time a team had home advantage in a final since Roma in 1984. This was only Chelsea's second final. Bayern were about to embark on their ninth. Chelsea's appearance was made more remarkable as Roberto Di Matteo was only installed as caretaker manager by Roman Abramovich in March and they'd already lifted the FA Cup.
Picking up the FA Cup would have been a pretty good tally for yourself coming in to take over from Andre Villas-Boas. Anyway, how much did that ease your preparations? And I don't know, the question about Bayern Munich, I guess, is that it looked about the most impossible fixture you could have had, short of another one with Barcelona, because it was a great Bayern team and it was at their place and they dispatched the other Spanish giants Real Madrid in the in the semi-final, they thought their name, I guess, was on the cup. Certainly, they had banners announcing that as you came out that day at the Allianz.
Those dealt the lucky hand for Bayern are Anatoly Timoshuk, Diego Contento, and Thomas Müller. The three in for the suspended trio, Alaba, Badstuber, and Luis Gustavo. Chelsea can go one better or worse with four players banned from the big show, including, of course, captain John Terry, Bosingwa, Luiz, Kalou, and surprisingly, Ryan Bertrand for his first ever Champions League game. They come into a side led by Frank Lampard.
With the suspensions that you had, with the limited choices that you had, was that all, did that almost make it the easiest game of all to prepare?
Well, it was an easy selection. That was for certain because everybody was available or fit to start the game. I mean, if you look at the bench, there weren't many players on the bench left, really. I mean, because of the four players that couldn't be available. And also we had Kale that was injured from Silva. And then David Luiz got injured as well. So, you know, we had a lot of question marks. Selection was easy. The game to prepare was... they were playing at home, basically. It was a home game for them, wasn't it? And they thought that the stars had probably aligned for them to win it, you know, in the home ground, the home stadium. It was a beautiful stadium as well, very impressive, you know. Mm. If you look back at it, it was pretty new at the time and very impressive, great atmosphere. It was fantastic, beautiful.
Were you, in the build-up to the game, publicly, I'm sure, as manager, you were being extremely confident and anything can happen in football, but in private, what was your thought about the task that faced you?
Oh, I believe that we could win it. I believe that we could win it. I just needed to figure out how to put the right places, the right place in the right place on the team.
Right.
Because some players were missing. And then, you know, we really needed David Luiz and Gary Cahill to come through and be fit to play. And that was just, it was a decision that we made with the risk that they could get injured after a minute. So we had a plan B, you know, if that was going to happen. We had already prepared a plan B to change the team around. And Paulo Ferreira was already on alert. You know, he did the warm-up. He was going to come in. And everybody knew that if that was the scenario, then we would do this and so on and so on. Unfortunately, they made it through. But it was really a last-minute decision to play. David Luiz especially, he was a bit more in danger. Gary trained a little bit before the game. David Luiz almost nothing.
The other risky decision was going with Ryan Bertrand. That was his first Champions League start ever. How was he when you told him?
I don't think I can say that on a podcast. You should have seen his face when I told him.
what did he do?
I know, he was in shock, I think, when he looked at me. I think he was happy that I actually, you know, I told him that he was going to play. I think the first reaction was, you know, when you tell a player you're going to play. And I think the second thought was, OMG, I'm playing. So it was a great face, you know, when I told him. It was just the best team balance that we could come up with. Because he had a good understanding with Ashley Cole, and so they could interchange the positions and bump forward. You know, Ashley liked to go forward and overlap and so on. And so we had him to Corinne, and Brian could have done the same. And so, and he gave the, because it was left foot to play. I tried, you know, during the week, I tried two or three other players there in that position, but everybody, it didn't quite feel right. They didn't quite knew how to play that position. And Ryan fitted in quite naturally because, you know, he was left back or left wing back, so it wasn't a risk. I mean, you know, the media and everybody said, you know, I was taking a gamble, but as a manager you don't look at it as a gamble because it made a lot of sense.
It certainly did. The narrative that we'd mentioned before about this being the last opportunity for this team, and it was Didier Drogba's last match for Chelsea of this stint. There was also a sense, I think, was there not, within Chelsea that this was not a competition? This was a competition that owed this club something. You'd had Chelsea had had four semi-final defeats in a decade, the defeat on penalties to Man United, Didier Drogba chasing Ovrejba around in flip-flops, all those things. There was a lot of momentum behind Chelsea coming into this game.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was very excited, of course. I mean, the fans were, you know, over the moon because I had experienced, obviously, the loss in the 2008 final. So it was not an opportunity. Didier is such a big man in the dressing room as well. it was, you know, it was our time. It was our time, but we deserved it. You know, we did everything in our power to win it. And ultimately, you know, nobody has gifted it to us. So thoroughly deserved it.
We'll break down the specifics of how you won the cup in a second. One thing I just wanted to mention, because it was such a lovely move. One of the things you did to prepare the match was the club produced a video of where you interview people, the kind of nearest and dearest of pretty much all the squad members who were going to be there in Munich. Whose idea was that? Where did that idea come from? And what was the reaction when you unveiled that film to the players ahead of the game?
I can't remember exactly how we came up with the idea. I mean, you know, I'm talking about, you know, I had, you know, Steve Horner with me, Eddie Newton, Christoph Lollishaw, our strength and conditioning coach as well, working with Frank now at Everton, Chris Jones. So we had a lot of stuff behind analysts, and I can't remember exactly how we came up with the idea, but the day before the game, it took obviously weeks to prepare it all. And the day before the game, you know, we did this meeting in the evening, and I think they were expecting some sort of tactical meeting, and we produced this video because we thought it was important that players understood that loved ones had belief in them as well. And what was remarkable is that it took a lot of tension out of the players, you know, of the team, because I remember how tense they were when they came into the meeting. And when they left, some cried as well, you know, because obviously some people had their mother on the video, some people, the kids, the wives, and so on. So I remember leaving the room and how the people or the players were so much more relaxed. So he had a good effect, a positive effect. Big, big, big group effort, you know. It took a lot of time to record all this.
Did they put anyone in for you, Roberto?
No, I don't need them. I didn't need one, you know. I wasn't playing.
All right. But you had a bit of a role to play. Let's talk then about the 19th of May, 2012. What was it like when you came out in that beautiful stadium, Allianz Arena? A sea of red and white, because it was effectively a home game for Bayern, and this giant banner dominating one end of the arena saying, "Our stadium, our land, our cup."
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
What did that make you feel?
Well, no, you notice these things, but also we saw the other end that was very blue, you know. So we knew we had the support of our supporters and our fans, and everybody was behind us. And, you know, it's exciting, James. I know that people think, you know, pressure and the tension. And yeah, of course, you feel that, you know, that little bit of tension in your stomach. It's normal, but, you know, it's very exciting. I mean, some players or managers never experience to play in the Champions League, never mind in the Champions League final. So to be there, I mean, you know, it's a dream to be able to play in one as a player or being the manager of a team. I mean, it's unbelievable. I knew I had a fantastic group of players. You know, I had such a good... And also very important as well, we had enough experience to win the competition, because, you know, when we did all the preparation for the various games and then for the final, I remember that we came across the average age of the winning teams or the teams that would make the semi-final and then the finals and win. It was interesting to see that the average age of the teams that would make the final and then go on to win the competition was pretty high. It was above 28.6 years of age. So we had the experience in the team to go and win the competition. Well, obviously, Bayern was a fantastic team at the time, you know, and it was a bit of a scratchy game, I would say. It wasn't the best football game, wasn't it? I mean,
a bit of a struggle for Chelsea so far. Feeling Bayern are moving up through the gears as well. There's Robben. He breezed past Mikel. He keeps going, and it's Cech who saves. How did it stay out? It's all Chelsea noise in the stands. It's almost as though the Bayern supporters, of course there are many on home ground, are just waiting for the moment. Is this it? It's wide from Müller. It's an absolute barrage.
I mean, finals often, you mentioned previously.
Often unless there is an early goal, but otherwise, they most of the time, they are quite balanced as well.
Well, it was Bayern who, with just 7 minutes left on the clock, took the lead.
Lifted into Gomez, Müller's come in, and Müller's beaten Cech and scored! Finally, breakthrough for Bayern. 82 minutes played. Bayern Munich have the lead in the Champions League final. Sure, the cross was intended for Gomez.
I think this is a brilliant header from Thomas Muller. What do you think?
No, he misheaded it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought he meant to do that. And that was the only way to beat okay. Petr Cech.
Is that what he claimed?
I don't know. From my very, very untutored viewpoint, that's what I always assumed, that he deliberately headed it down in order to bounce it over Petr Cech. But clearly I'm wrong. Anyway, however he did it, Bayern were ahead.
Bayern Munich 1, Chelsea 0. Not long left.
Only minutes left on the clock. What do you do at this point?
What do I do? I made a change, didn't I?
That's all you can do. I mean, you're stood there on the sideline and you are clearly enjoying playing with house money.
I think I was going to make the change anyway.
Here comes Chelsea's semi-final Barcelona hero, Fernando Torres. It is a time for heroes now.
In a broader sense, I mean, you talked about the fact that you had nothing to lose that season coming in as interim manager. And it, to that extent, you're playing with house money almost. You're playing these big games, and nobody expected, I don't think, or very few people expected Chelsea to win that final. Okay, you've got 7 minutes to turn it around, but from a managerial point of view, what can you do? You throw on a player, but you just have to sit back and hope. Is it frustrating as a former player that?
Well, as a manager, you can only influence the game so much, you know. You do all your preparation before. Once the game started, there are little adjustments you can make, but there isn't too much you can do. So, you know, we had a few minutes left. I mean, 7 minutes left to get an equaliser, and Mr. Didier Drogba, the Lion, came up with it.
And in terms of belief, there's a great quote about Wamata says to Didier prior to that equaliser, look around, Didier, look where we are, keep believing, just believe. Magnificent, no? And then he goes and provides that cross from the corner.
First things first for Pedro Proença, just letting everybody know he's got an eye on the pulling and pushing. Cahill on the move, in towards Drogba, it's a bullet header, Chelsea level! Didier Drogba does it again! Bayern Munich, most of the stadium in Munich, are shell-shocked by that. Bayern minutes away from becoming champions of Europe again. But it's Chelsea who've had a say, a huge say from a huge, huge player.
And this goal, I imagine you would say this was a good header.
That was a great header, but I think he meant that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a fantastic header. I mean, it was probably one of the last chances that we had probably to score. Maybe we would have had another one, but it was a fantastic header. I mean, so powerful, the first corner. His post. It's great. Not even Neuer could stop that one.
What was your view like of that from the sideline? Could you see well?
Oh, very well. I saw that very well. No, it was very powerful.
What did you feel? You stood there, as all the Chelsea supporters were, hoping for a moment like that.
I'm already thinking about extra time then.
Okay.
So just pray, I already think about extra time. I mean, it was 89th minute then.
Yeah.
So already thinking, I already think about extra time, how to go into extra time and what needed to be done for the next 30 minutes.
Drogba has the feeling that this is his night. Oh, but it's an awful free kick. It was a tired attempt. It's the last kick of the match. We're going into extra time at the Allianz Arena. Bayern Munich 1, Chelsea 1.
What do you remember of extra time? As usual, Didier Drogba gave away a penalty, but I'm sure you could forgive him.
Yeah, that was in the game plan either again.
Ribéry down, penalty! Penalty Bayern Munich. Chelsea's hero, Drogba. Well, he wrestled them back into the final. Has he now taken one clumsy step towards them losing it again? It's Arjen Robben. 67 times a Chelsea player. And Robben's effort saved by Cech, who smothered it enough to gather it in again.
You know, the feeling in the group was that if we were going to get to penalties, somehow we felt that we were going to win. And it's not that I said to the players, you know, just get to penalties. You always hope to win in extra time. But I think the general feeling was that if we are going to penalties, we have a really, really good chance. And I think the team felt that as well. I think that's how we played in the extra time a little bit as well, trying to get there.
Is that quite a common thing, do you think, once teams get to extra time to just...
Well, it's a bit sketchy, isn't it? Because, you know, if you concede in extra time, even though it depends when, obviously, but because of the time limit, you know, it's 30 minutes, it feels really, really short. So you tend to panic if you can see the goal. So both teams are normally, even Bayern, you know, obviously they had the penalty, but they were a little bit more careful as well, I would say, next time. It's just that game plan where you think, okay, let's not lose it now. Mm. I think that's the mindset.
Well, you get to penalties then.
And that's it. The Champions League final of 2012 is going to be decided by a penalty shootout. It might have been decided by a penalty in extra time.
As happened all the way through for Chelsea, you make a run for your own backs. You get off to a bad start. Philipp Lahm scores first of all, and then Wamata steps up.
Wamata is such a great guy. He's such a... And his family as well, they're so nice people.
Wamata is first in the Chelsea queue. Neuer trying to put him off. And it's worked! Too close to the German keeper.
So Wamata was struggling for the last 10 minutes. You know, he had a bit of a groin issue, and I've got Obi Mikel, you know, looking at me and saying, Gaffer, he's struggling. I said, yeah, I can see that, Obi. So I'm chatting to my assistant. I'm thinking, shall we take him off? But, you know, he's a penalty taker. If we take him off, then poor Paulo Ferreira, poor guy, you know, in the final, he warmed up about 7 times, because every time somebody goes down, Paulo was, unless he was a striker, obviously, you know, but Paulo would have come in. So he was on alert all the time, Paulo Ferreira. So what do? Leave him on, take him off, leave him on. And I'm thinking, and the time is going down, you know, it's clocking down. And so ultimately, I leave him in. We get to the penalties, and penalty takers, who goes first, second, third, and so on. And Wamata's first. What happens? You know, you choose your best penalty takes. What happens? You know, he misses. But fortunately, we won.
I mean, there's football. And anything can happen. But yes, it's 1-0 after Lahm had scored. Then Mario Gomez scores, and now it's 2-0. And up steps David Luiz.
David Luiz is taking the longest of runs. He really has to score. And he has scored. No messing about with that one.
He brings the thunder with his penalty kick. Do you remember? He has this extraordinary run-up.
Yeah. He was a good penalty taker. Mm. It was quite brave as well, because you need to be a bit brave as well. Mm. We had good penalty takers, really confident penalty takers.
As it turns out, you did. Well, that makes it 2-1. And surprisingly, do you remember it was Manuel Neuer himself who steps up for the
next? Well, no, he wasn't the first time. I mean, he used to take penalties. I think even regular season, he took one or two.
Okay.
You don't often see a goalkeeper going this early in a shootout, but such is the confidence of Manuel Neuer, and he's managed to squeeze it under his opposite number.
He successfully converted this one, so now it's 3-1 for Bayern, who are not far away from being Champions League winners. Frank Lampard, no big surprise there, steps up.
He was your third, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah, and I imagine he was one of the first names that came to mind when you thought about who's going to take penalties. Frank is.
Well, we had. I mean, I had my penalty takes. So it was just a question of the...
Order.
Of the order, yeah.
Yeah, which is the question. Which is the most important penalty taker in the first five?
They say, generally you say, you know, the first and the fifth. But the first, definitely, if you don't get to the fifth, then the fifth is useless. So you need to just have 5 good penalty takers, confident penalty takers, and then get the order. You know, I asked the players, you know, which order they wanted to go. And the players you chose, and then it changed a little bit as well, you know. But Didier was always going to be number 5. It was just a question of the others, if they wanted to go first, second, third, fourth.
I'll skip over there. I mean, Frank Lampard converts that. Then Olic. In fact, I won't skip over, because I think this is where we talk about Petr Cech, probably, because he's talked about spending, I think, 8 hours or so analysing penalty takers from Bayern.
Effort. Yeah. I mean, for the final, maybe a little bit more, but for every game that we played, you know, he used to, him and Christoph Lollichon, the goalkeeping coach, they used to analyse all the penalty takes and every penalty. And it's not a coincidence, neither is it luck, that he saved all those penalties.
Hmm. He went the right way on every single one of Bayern's kicks. He didn't save them all, but he saved from Olic.
To put Bayern on the brink of glory. But he's not managed to do it! Petr Cech with the save! Chelsea back in business.
And crucially, after Ashley Cole had made it 3-3 for Chelsea in the shootout, from Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger. And Schweinsteiger's missed it! Chelsea are only a kick away.
He's in bits after that.
Yeah.
So up steps Didier Drogba. And what are you thinking at this point, Roberto?
There's no way he's going to miss. No, we knew. I mean, he could have missed, of course. But in reality, we were all then thinking, yeah, he's going to score. He's going to score. He's going to write history.
Didier Drogba, sent off in Moscow 4 years ago, couldn't take a penalty against Manchester United. This to make Chelsea champions of Europe.
It's the beautiful ending, because he was going to leave that summer. It's a beautiful ending of a beautiful career in this club for Didier Drogba.
Drogba scores! History is made! Chelsea, the champions of European football. How good does that sound?
Have you watched that final back, Roberto?
I think once, yeah. I've watched it back once, but not the whole final.
Just
some highlights here.
Yeah. With English commentary?
That's a good question.
Well, did you hear Gary? Yeah, so Gary Neville, basically,
English commentary, yeah.
And the victory takes him to a place that, again, I don't think any of us expected him to arrive. Gary says, they're crying. It was Drogba, it was the angels, it was the heavens, it was the stars, it was the gods, it was everything for Chelsea. This is not anything to do with football. This is more than football. This is spirit. Do you know what he means?
Yeah. What he means, no, I never asked him what he means with that. But I guess he means that the angels in the sky aligned for us to win it.
Is that what happened?
That there was a superior force that helped us to win it. I guess that's the metaphor that he was using.
Right.
I guess. I don't know, but I guess.
No, but I think so too. I wonder if you... I know that you quite rightly talk about the amount of work that Chelsea did, the confidence, the faith, the character that Chelsea showed against incredible odds in football terms throughout that campaign. Did it feel for you like you were part of a very special story, that something really almost magical was happening around you?
Yes, definitely. Yes, absolutely. But again, I think that we created that environment to be able to happen.
The scenes after Didier scored that, where he goes flat out on the ground, and then somebody pulls him up and he heads off. He starts lapping the stadium a bit like Ben-Hur or something. Ivanovic is perched on top of a crossbar. No idea how he gets up there. You, in the scenes from the TV scenes, you're kind of spoofando. You're kind of blowing your... almost taking deep breaths to try and master the emotions that you're going through.
I was overwhelmed, James. And it's, you know, I can't even describe what I felt. I was overwhelmed with joy, emotions, and all the tension, and from the game. It was 120 minutes of the game, the penalties, and all the preparation to the game. I remember it was the night before the game. I was in my room in the hotel with the club doctor Paco, because asking him, if I could start with Gary or David Luiz, or if I could risk any of them or both of them. And that moment when everything finishes and, you achieved the objective of the club, because not only did we win the competition, but it enabled us to actually play in the competition the year after.
So, and Tottenham not to.
And Tottenham, yeah. And Harry was at the game, because, I spoke to Jamie a couple of times. And obviously, so you're overwhelmed with a lot of emotions. And I think I remember that after the first celebration, I went to you playing, because I think, and shake his hands and I show respect. And after that, it's a bit of a blur. I did some interviews, I think. My son came down. Somebody brought my son. There's a lot of blur after that, James. It was great. I had my family there as well, James. I had my family, my wife, my father, my sister, my friends, and my kids. And it was great.
Being a manager, there's always another headache when you beat Barcelona. You've now got Bayern in the final with players out. When Drogba equalises at the 90th, then you've got to think, oh, I've got to sort out extra time. There's always something. Was this the one moment that you felt just release everything?
I'm not sure I ever felt relieved, because, as I said, I didn't have really anything to lose in that sense.
Okay.
So I never felt relieved in that sense, but I felt overjoyed. I was, I was very, very happy.
So we then next see you, I think, bounding up the steps to collect the trophy. You're essentially the intern that's just saved the day, Not long after stepping in the middle of a really difficult situation with the club, you have essentially masterminded the greatest triumph possible in club football. You're going up the steps and then you see your boss right in front of you. I can't see his face from the angle because it's behind Abramovich. It's from behind him. But yeah, we can see you saying, "I want it! I want it!"
I think we did it, I said, or something like that. We did it.
Right.
Oh, I want it. I can't remember. It's 10 years ago. I think we did it. I said something like that. We did it.
Yeah. What does he say?
I'm not sure he said anything. I think, really? I don't know, maybe congratulations or about.
Okay.
It was all, you know, there was so much going on. And I think my reaction was, like, yeah, we did it. And then we had to go to collect the trophy. And so there wasn't much time.
For sure. I was just curious because, A, he never says any, he never used to say anything publicly. And B, it was quite an iconic moment for people watching at home because I guess we're used to seeing managers and their clubs engage in almost formulate relations between one and the other. It was really heartwarming. It was such a personal moment for you, the excitement on your face and how much pleasure. And then, okay, so then you move along and then you lift the trophy. Your friends are there, your family's there, your son's there.
The name Chelsea is going on to the biggest prize of European club football for the very first time. John Terry has changed into his kit and along with Frank Lampard lifts the trophy aloft. Chelsea, champions.
The greatest moment? Is this even a question of your career as a player or manager?
Yes, as a manager, certainly, even though the FA Cup was pretty special as well. And it gets forgotten because of the Champions League. But, you know, winning an FA Cup is pretty special as well, I have to say. Certainly as a manager, as a player, it's a different feeling, James. You know, you're part of a group, you're more influenced in the end result because you're playing. So you have a bit more influence in that. While as a manager, you can do a lot, but ultimately the players have to follow your instructions, but they go on and execute or implement a strategy. So it's an indirect really execution of a game plan, while as a player you are actually direct execution. You execute, you influence the game.
Which is true, but having said that, with another manager, that club was heading out of Europe, and with you, they did what they'd never been able to do, despite coming so close with some of the most illustrious names in management.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, we went again into the books of history for the club and for the players. It's going to be one of those, for the players and for me, it's going to be one of those memories that we will cherish forever, because it brought together a group that was maybe fragmented, and they achieved one of the best successes you can have in the modern football era together.
Well, I'm delighted for you, Roberto, because it was such an incredible story, and it was remarkable, not least because of your involvement in it and the way that came about. Right. The flip side, though, was it was a meteoric rise as Chelsea manager, and it was a fairly precipitous fall once the new season got underway. Things, again, there were complications. Frank Lampard had injury. John Terry was out with a ban. Didier headed off to China. And you end up with a second leg against an Italian side that you're not able to bring Chelsea back from, with a 3-0 defeat against Juventus. And you then fly home and they call you in. This sounds brutal. At 4 a.m. the morning after touching down to Cobham to be relieved of your... I mean, it does sound miserable.
Well, it's never nice when when the board tells you that you are released from your duties. So it doesn't really matter if it's in the morning or the afternoon. We were just flying home, so I was going to go into my office anyway. So that's not the point. But it's never a nice moment in anybody's career.
When you speak about management, you sound like you enjoyed it a lot. Do you miss it?
There are days that I do miss it, yes. And, you know, even though I haven't been involved for many years now, somewhere there's a sense in me that one day I will get back into it, that somehow in some capacity. I just feel it's not finished yet, but maybe I'm wrong. It's just a feeling that I have, James, that maybe it could turn into something real one day. But at the moment, I'm having a really good time in my life. I do a lot of things in football, maybe a little bit behind the scenes, so it's not that public, but I'm still very much involved in certain areas.
Okay, and you do a lot of things outside of football as well. Who knows, maybe your Chelsea story has a third act to it. Wouldn't that be remarkable? In the meantime, do you ever get together with that group of players, or did you all just kind of go your separate ways after that?
Well, everybody has obviously moved on, and some live in these countries. JT, I see him on a regular basis. Frank, I bump into Frank sometimes. And Didier, I saw Didier at the FIFA event. Paulo Ferreira, I see, because he worked at the academy. Yeah, there's players that, you see every now and then. And I think this year, they're postponed. Next year it's going to be a charity game for 10th anniversary, but they had to postpone it. It was supposed to be this year, but because of the current situation with the sanctions, or previous situation with the sanctions, they had to postpone it to next year. So it's going to be a nice get together, I guess, with everybody again to see. But that victory will bond us together forever.
Magnificent. Roberto, thank you for sharing a little bit of that bond with us. It was a truly remarkable Champions League campaign to witness and clearly to be part of as well. And very best of luck for the future, especially if it involves a bit of management.
Thank you very much, James. I shall be watching you on TV.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.